And first of all, since I've seen you face to face, Cynthia Bathurst is in the studio. Cynthia is also a co-founder of an organization called Safe Humane Chicago that I know a lot about that we'll talk about. But I want to talk about this. So there you are walking. You're just walking. You're minding your own business. And you were looking for something that they call mountain gorillas. And you found them, a whole family of them. And there you are. They didn't necessarily practice social distancing, did they?
No, they didn't. And it was just incredible. You know this, Steve. It's a life-changing experience. You're in their environment, in their living room, and you're walking down this path. And suddenly, the scouts, the leads, tell you, just stand still and look to the left. And I look to the left, and 10 feet away is this magnificently beautiful silverback. And right beside him is this little bitty teenage gorilla looking all cute. And then I look around and there are, I think in this family, there were 8 other gorillas.
Now, we have to make this clear that this was not at a zoo.
Nope.
This was in Africa, in Uganda. You're in the Virunga Mountains and you're looking for mountain gorillas. So I guess the first question is, why were you in the Virunga Mountains looking for mountain gorillas? Who would do that?
Because it is something I always wanted to do for as long as I can remember, to see beings, to be in their environment and to understand what they're like. So I took it upon myself in my last few years of adventuring and...
Last few years?
Well, of adventuring out on my own.
She's not an elderly woman at all. You just had a birthday.
Yes, I did.
Number 42.
That's it. Something like that.
Uh-huh. Don't argue with the host.
Okay.
And you decided you want to do this.
Right. Right.
And you sure did.
And I did. And so I decided to go to Uganda because a friend connected me with a travel person who was head over heels in love with Uganda. And so I went and I actually went on 2 gorilla tracking things because I was afraid one of them, something could happen. It could rain. It could do anything. So I went on 2. One in the Bwindi impenetrable forest and then one in Magahinga.
Now, tracking the gorillas can be easy, but typically it's not so easy. I mean, first of all, there's paths, but the gorillas don't necessarily go where the paths are. They go where they go.
No, they don't.
And secondly, you are going through impenetrable, is the right word, actually, because you're cutting all these vines and bamboo and all these other things as you try to make your way through. You have people doing that for you. You have porters doing that for you. But it's not like, as they say, a walk in the park.
No, it's not. And
you're up high, the altitude.
Yes.
I mean, Chicago, we're not used to, I mean, I get altitude sickness when I stand up after doing potty, you know? I mean, really? I mean, we're not used to that.
We went from like 100 when we were in Magahinga the second day. It was quite a trek to find them. It took us 3.5 hours.
That's a hike.
To find them, and it was straight up. So when they asked me if I wanted a porter, I said, oh, I'm fine. You know, I'm fine. And they said, well, you might want a porter to help you. Good thing we helped each other up and down slippery rocks, and I thought, oh my gosh, 3.5 hours. And when we saw them and sat there for an hour and watched them interact, and they watched us, it's just unbelievable to be there with those beings in their presence, never more than 10 or 20 feet away from them unless they ran off and did something and came back.
So there's signs before you go up there. I happen to know all this, as you know. There's signs that say you must be, I forget how many meters it is because I'm an American. I don't know meters.
Yes.
But you must be a certain number of meters away. The gorillas don't read that signage.
No, they don't.
And they don't care. Now, social distancing has always been a deal there because gorillas can get the common cold or anything else we can get, including COVID-19.
Yes.
And they're particularly susceptible to respiratory illnesses, which COVID-19, caused by the SARS coronavirus 2, is. So that is something. And they don't wear masks, I don't believe, the gorillas.
The gorillas don't, but we did. And it was really great. I actually wore 2 masks. I wanted to take no chance that I could convey something to one of them. And, of course, everyone had tests and all that stuff. All that sort of thing. So they did stay their distance. But, you know, and just to be there and sit and be in their presence, well, you know, it's hard to describe.
Yeah,
when have I been at a loss for words? But I was.
But let's give it a shot. So there you are looking across from a creature who, if a gorilla wanted to, even the lowly female gorillas. They could break you in half just
yes,
like that.
Huge.
I mean, they're so strong and so big. I mean, so strong. I mean, I forget what the number is, but something like 40 times stronger than,
yes,
than us, a
yes.
female gorilla, and a male gorilla, a silverback, many times that. So they can
amazing.
Do damage to us if they wanted to. They're totally uninterested in us, however. We can credit part of that way back to Diane Fossey.
Yes.
If you don't know who she is, Gorillas in the Mist was the
yes.
name of the movie that was based on her, who actually then, way back when, the great-grandparents, the great-great-great-grandparents of many of these gorillas were habituated to human beings.
Right. And it's amazing. I made some great friends, Steve, there. The lead, when we were in Magahinga.
Some of the gorillas, you mean?
Well, actually, sort of, because the lead guy, he and I are now Facebook friends, and we
the
email.
The lead gorillas on Facebook? What?
The lead human.
Oh.
And he sends me pictures of the same family that we saw and says, here's what they're doing now. And then one quick story I just have to tell you. It was so cute. When we were in Bwindi, the impenetrable forest, we found them pretty quickly. There was two teenage gorillas, and they wanted to be near the people, but the scouts didn't want them to be. You know, they couldn't let them get near us. But so this one little guy would go up to the top of the hill above us, roll not head over heel, but how would you do that? Side to side, down the hill like some kid. He'd roll down real close to the people, jump up, run over, tag someone's leg, like he tagged my leg, and then ran back up and did it again and rolled down to another. It was amazing.
Did you ever feel threatened?
No. Everybody said, weren't you afraid? No, I was not. I was a strange, beautiful calm. I'm hooked.
You're in awe.
Yes.
After seeing.
I am.
Know. I know.
I am.
You know, It's an experience that can move you to tears.
Yes.
And I don't know that it is hard to convey how that can be. I'll
right.
let you give it a shot. I mean, you're looking in the mirror in a way.
Yes, yes. And you're looking at these beings who sort of understand that you're there, and you have all these people. I mean, it's just such an intricate economy in some ways, but economy of spirit, not just, you know, a political or financial economy. And those beings are looking at you, and, you know, best of all, the silverbacks, the head silverback of the family knows when 1 hour is up, because that's what they've trained them all to know, that you can have exactly 1 hour and that's it. I couldn't believe it. Our guide had just said, we have one more minute. And then the silverback stood up, made is sort of like looked around, and one of them kind of beat his chest a little bit, and the whole family got together and went off, and they said, there's our 1 hour.
Well, let's back up a little bit and explain. According to the rules and regulations, the tourist, which you were one of,
yes.
only have 1 hour to watch these gorillas,
right.
which seems like plenty of time. In some ways, it really isn't. And the gorillas kind of know it. They walk off stage almost.
Yes, exactly. They get there and they say, okay, here are these guys.
Yeah.
And then 1 hour, exactly it was. They walk off. So the human guides are very cognizant of that, but the gorillas were more so, and it was just to see them in their environment, and I really felt like I was in their home.
Well, you are.
Yes, and it was amazing, and there we are in the middle of an impenetrable forest or a high mountain and rocks, and it was
other animals, a variety
other
of insects
animals.
For
right.
sure.
Right.
Several texts here. 312-981-7200. You can call or text. From 847, this is an interesting question, actually. Wearing mask around the gorillas. I wonder if the gorillas thought the humans look strange without a nose or a mouth. Did the mask wearers paint a nose or a mouth on the mask? I suspect you may not have done that. I don't know.
I did not. But I did wonder if they would look at us strangely, but they just seemed to take us in and, you know, accept us. For
yeah.
whatever. And there were fewer tourists when I went last September because COVID had really kept everyone away. And we were one of the few. So I was really felt honored. So I was in a smaller group. And so I guess they just get used to it. It's like, okay, here come these humans. Let's placate them.
It's incredible. More about the mountain gorillas. And you're the co-founder of an organization, a nonprofit, called Safe Humane Chicago that has saved many, many dogs in Chicago. We'll talk about that as well. Steve Dale's Other World on WGN. It's 2:48. Karen Conti will be here after 3 o'clock, but for now we're talking about, and I'm sure Karen would appreciate this, she's a great traveler, about mountain gorillas that you saw in Uganda. There's three countries you could see them in. Uganda, potentially the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Yes. Is that,
and, yes. And that's a dangerous place for people to go.
Right.
And the other is Rwanda, which is a wonderful place for people to go.
Yes.
I know that. How was Uganda?
It was amazing. I have all kinds of T-shirts I've gotten from them for me to celebrate Uganda because it's not gone to as much. They have an incredible people, really warm, really friendly. It's beautiful. I stayed at Lake Mutanda.
How were the accommodations?
They were great. I mean, you know, we had generators only for 3 or 4 hours a day a couple times, you know, so that you can see yourself and whatever, but I didn't really worry about what I looked like. So,
did they have Wi-Fi?
They did for 3 hours in the morning and 3 hours in the evening.
See, that's my first question, and that's not a good first question, is it?
Yeah, but well, it was very difficult to, you know, but when I got to the airport, I was able to load up all my videos and pictures, not all, a few.
Yeah, yeah. Were you surprised at the video you were able to get, that the mountain gorillas were just doing their thing, doing what they typically do, and didn't care that you were there?
No, they really didn't. And a couple of the porters and the scouts, the security guys, I was alone, traveling alone, so they all kind of looked after me, you know, and that was fun.
Did they think it's kind of a crazy thing that here, you do have blonde hair,
yes,
that a woman from America with blonde hair is traveling alone?
Yeah, no, they thought it was highly unusual, so they kept, you know, doing things, and I loved this part of it. They would take my phone and go take a video real close up, you know, of an animal, a gorilla that they knew. So I said, sure, go for it, you know, this will be great. And now I've made friends with some of them, and they send me photos and videos of the family. I love it. Got to know one of the families there and got to know their village. I got to walk around in their village when I wasn't tracking gorillas. It was amazing, and I felt honored and deeply connected to the world in a very different way.
You know, the mountain gorillas are an anomaly.
Yes.
Among the great apes, because here, as we're talking, orangutans are just disappearing.
Yes.
Sadly. I mean, they're just totally being wiped off our planet, both species of orangutan. Chimpanzees are kind of maintaining their numbers and losing numbers, depending on where you're talking about in Africa. The great ape that people don't know about, the pygmy chimp or the bonobo, they're kind of holding their own or going down. The other gorilla species, the two lowland species gorillas, are declining in numbers.
Right.
But the mountain gorillas are holding their own, and Cynthia, you're responsible for that. And everyone who's gone to see them is.
Yes.
Because here's a case where ecotourism has given the local authorities reason to keep the gorillas safe, and they're not always successful at that, which
right.
I'll talk about in a moment. But for the most part, they are.
Right.
In fact, there are veterinarians, the mountain gorilla veterinarians, that are right there. If a gorilla falls out of a tree, doesn't happen every day, but it can, or something happens to one of the gorillas, or they're sick, and they notice, the guide you talk about, notice that, oh, that gorilla over there is wheezing.
That's right. They
yeah,
do
they,
that.
They do. And it's controversial to some extent, because
right.
some say let wildlife be. But here, we're saving gorillas that are sick as well, and learning more about them. And in learning
right.
more about them, we learn more about us.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, in ways that are very surprising, like now respiratory viruses, et cetera.
Right.
So that's really important stuff. Never mind the ethical issue of
right.
keeping our relatives around. Did you get a sense of everything I talked about, that these animals are truly important to people that live there now, culturally, as well as to the government, because of the money you and others bring in?
Absolutely. I mean, when I was there, the economy was pretty bad. So being able to hire porters and people to help who know the gorillas and have been working with them and know them and live next to them and know what they're talking about. And they're so close to them. They talk about them like they're a family member who lives in the woods. So it was important for me to say that whole community was very connected. And, you know, I'll just have to say, when I go again, I'll take more money to give as tips and other kinds of things, because these people work so hard. They're so friendly. They so welcome us, but they keep the gorillas safe. They make sure they're safe.
Well, they do the best they can.
Yes.
And there's still poaching that sometimes does go on.
Yes.
And during COVID in particular, there was some that I've read about. In fact, it was in Uganda, I believe.
Yes.
So are you, did you hear stories about this?
Yes, and they talk about they showed me a little hut where some of them stayed sometimes when the weather was okay to make sure that the poachers that came from a certain place didn't come through there, and they were all there with their, you know, AK-47s or whatever waiting. And I'm like, okay, but they wanted to keep the poachers out to protect those families. I mean, there's close to 1,000, maybe it's only 800 gorillas there now, but it's the only and largest population of mountain gorillas in the world.
Well, it's the only population between those two. And being on a mountaintop that borders three nations, as it happens, as I said, Uganda, Rwanda, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo, they have nowhere to go.
Right.
So it's like they're on an island.
Right.
So if something happens, a disease, not even poaching, then that's it.
That's
You know, that's all we have. Several questions here via text. One is, what did the gorilla smell like?
What a great question. I didn't notice. What I noticed was...
They did not need deodorant, is
what
you're saying.
No, they... I don't want to talk about me after that four and a half hour fun about
the gorillas.
But, what I noticed was the smells of the forest, the dampness, the trees, everything around it. I didn't smell anything foul or anything. So I don't know what they smell like.
You kind of hear them, though, don't
you?
Oh,
definitely.
They talk to one another.
They
and it's
talk
not the
to
beating
one
chest thing necessarily. But they do make sounds, a wide variety of different grunts and things, and they do have a language, actually.
Yes, and I was listening to some of the little ones and the mothers and how they were interacting with each other, or a little bitty one got up on a tree a little too far, and the mom made this little noise, and he started coming down, and I was so intent on listening and watching and pulling everything together.
How much did the trip cost is another question.
Oh, Lord. Well, you know, it is, a gorilla pass, a one-day pass, cost about $1,500 in Uganda. It's more in Rwanda because they have a bigger area. So Uganda, it's a little less expensive. Still, $1,500 just for the pass. So, you know, you have to get there.
Yeah.
So it's several thousand dollars to round-trip flights. You've got to stay somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So while it's not outrageous by American standards, depending on where you stay.
I think it's ecotours.com is the website of the group I went with. And that might be a good idea, too. One more quick question. How many different languages do the guides and porters speak?
They told me in that little in that group of about 10 support folks for us, they represented 12 different languages.
You know, I'm a bad person, Cynthia. I forgot to ask you about Safe Humane Chicago. So I need to have you back so we can do that because
I would love to.
We're out of time. Give us 15 seconds. That's all I have, really, on Safe Humane.
Safe Humane creates safer and more humane communities, and we bring together people and animals who've been impacted by trauma, violence, poverty, put them in programs, and give them skills and hope that they can be ambassadors for Safe Humane.
And the website?
SafeHumaneChicago.org.
Thank you, Cynthia Bathurst.
Thank you so much for having me.